throws away in. There's a breakaway coming, and it's Dvorak, and he's got Dauphin with him. Dvorak into the backhand, scores! Christian Dvorak with a beautiful finish. He's got two, and the Canadians are up 4-1.
Kachuk back to Gaudreau in front. Monahan dangles in and scores!
Canucks are back on the power play, brought to you by Play Now Sports as they get a shot left wing. Scores! Brock Besser in front.
Chuck back to Shabbat. Gets it across. Morris gets it back. Here's Shabbat. Scoops it down low. Rat play side of the net. Batherson scores! Batherson gets his own rebound. Ottawa ties the game on the power play.
TSN 1200.
Yeah, how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. It is 8:15 here on a Wednesday morning with JR, Simmer, and Hammer. Some highlights from around the NHL last night. It was a busy night. Lots of interesting scores and storylines. And here in Ottawa, that was the best of times. Drake Batherson's power play goal. The worst of times, well, you could pick a few of them. The game-winning goal and the whole schmozzel going on over at the bench and should have whistled down. And then the late-game decision on the power play by DJ Smith and company to, A, not use a timeout on two different occasions, or B, lift the goalie on either of those occasions as well, either doing both or at least one of them. That certainly can be questioned as well, all part of a Sabres 3-1 win over the Sens. All right, let's bring into the equation our man on the scene, Dave Poulin, in town to do the game last night on TSN television. Dave joins us this morning, as always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. Just unraveling what I saw last night. There was some unraveling to do there, and particularly on that winning goal. And, you know, my first thought at the time was both teams had too many men on the ice, but they didn't. Actually, there were six Ottawa Senators on the ice at that point, and there were only five Buffalo Sabres. And it was Josh Brown who realized first that the whistle hadn't blown. And so it was his action of picking up the puck and coming up the ice that triggered like three guys to leave the pile, the Buffalo side of the pile. See, Buffalo's on the outside of that pile, on the ice side. Whereas because of where the pile was and the bench was, the Ottawa players are right by the door. So the first reaction of their three guys was to change. The first reaction of the Ottawa three guys was to turn and get back into the play. And then it was a strip from behind by Jankowski of Josh Brown that turns things the other way. Josh Brown thinks, I got a two-on-one here with Brady Kachuk. So there's so many different things going on. Very surprised. We all thought the whistle had blown, guys, and we just did. I mean, you just assume because there were refs pulling bodies out of a pot. When that happens, the whistle has usually gone. And for whatever reason, it didn't. And then proceeded from there, and Jankowski makes a good play to strip Josh Brown of the puck and goes in and scores. And I'm sure at that point you can see, you know, Anton Forsberg's thinking, wait a second, is this for real right now? Or am I just, you know, is this the whistle blowing and we're in practice and I'm just saying, what are you still doing going? The coach blew the whistle. Mm. So crazy, crazy sequence. And I hadn't seen anything quite like it before. John Abbott, who I was doing the game with, felt the same way. He looked at me and said, have you ever seen anything like that? And I said, no, not in that exact context. And the oldest adage is to play until you hear the whistle, and a couple guys did, but it was actually Josh Brown who did first.
As you said, the anticipation was for a whistle that never happened. In your opinion, should it have been whistled down?
I think so. I think you've got bodies piled in like that. You know, you've got four or five or six guys piled in at that point. Usually when it's in that proximity to the bench and the door is open, they're trying to avoid something worse happening, you know, a melee of any sort happening. But I guess the accurate thing is if they think they can get it separated and they read it differently, because the pile was separating itself, JR, because of what happened. And the Buffalo guys were a little late in getting there originally. And then they were, as I said, on the inside, on the ice side. So I guess technically no, but expectation wise, yes.
Do you think in the case of Brown Pooley, for the role he plays, that one eye was actually on, should I jump into the scrum versus necessarily thinking about handling the puck?
Absolutely. In fact, I think when he first picked the puck up, it was to get back towards the scrum, not to handle the puck, because of the guys, and he'd be the most willing to go into that pile and clean things up. And so you had a little role reversal going on at that point. certainly with Josh Brown.
Okay, so that was a talking point in the loss because the game-winning goal ended up being scored on that whole play. The other was at the end of the game, and on the television broadcast, you appeared to be, and I won't put words in your mouth, a little bit perplexed by the decision by DJ Smith and company to either A, not call a timeout, or B, not pull the goalie, or both of them together on two different opportunities during that late power play. So kind of take us through your thinking on how that all played itself out.
Yeah, so mine started at the whistle blowing at the halfway point of the penalty. So the penalty happens, I look up, I see 3 minutes, and I want to get into a different aspect of this. And, you know, the beauty of being in the buildings and not calling them off too, as we've been forced to do, you know, on occasion here, is I can now look at the bench. And I look at the bench, and immediately one of the coaches is approaching. I think it was Jack Capuano who's approaching DJ to chat right when the whistle blows. And so they're halfway through, and they haven't been able to set up in the first half of that power play. So between the 3 and the 2 minute mark, they haven't been able to get entry. So a couple thoughts, guys. You have the ultimate confidence in that power play, who moved the puck very well last night, scored one goal, had some different looks. I thought they used the down low ice very well. So he's got the ultimate confidence in his number one power play right now. That's the start of it. And it's the management of that. Number two, and I want to go in a few different directions here. I had the opportunity to play golf on a fairly regular occasion with an NFL coaching staff. And we used to talk about these types of things, and they have a coach called a quality control coach. All he does is manage the clock during a game. Now, in the NFL, you have three timeouts, you have, you know, all these different situations. But all the quality control coach does, his only job, because they have way too many coaches in the NFL, is to manage the clock. And we talked about this, and they would say to me, well, who manages the clock? And I would say, well, you know, sometimes that's designated to an assistant coach, and, you know, the head coach has the ultimate call. But, you know, sometimes it's an assistant coach who goes up and pulls on his sleeve and says, hey, we're taking the timeout now. And he has that authority over the head coach just because that's his job, and that's part of his job description. And I'm not sure, you know, different coaches handle that in different ways. I'm not sure, you know, exactly how the Sens do handle that. But, you know, that might be a good question to follow up and say, you know, is there a guy specifically that, you know, how was the conversation? You know, it was had. And so then, you know, I'll take a step further. When I started coaching early in my tenure, there was a general manager at one of my games, and I was with him afterwards. And he said to me, you call the timeout in the second period. And I said, well, yeah, I'm on the bench, and you know, I didn't like the way things were going, and I just wanted to rattle things, and I called a timeout. I was a rookie coach. I'd never coached before. And he smiled, and he said, I'll never challenge you for when you call a timeout. I'll talk to you about it. I'll get your thoughts about it, but I'll never challenge you because I'm not on the bench. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the mood is. You're the head coach. You're going to read that mood. He said, but if the game ends and you still have a timeout left, and I think you should have called it at some point, then we're going to have a conversation. And that always stayed with me. And maybe it made me more aggressive to use a timeout during a game if I thought the timing was critical. So those are just some background things. And so now you're at the 2 minute mark, and your thought is you've got, you know, your number one power play is not effective in the first half. And you look up and you say, they can't go the whole 3 minutes, so I'm going to rest them right now. And that's just a coaching decision, an absolute coaching decision. And you might rest them and get 30 seconds. You might get a quick whistle. You have the ultimate confidence in them, but you're clearly thinking you're going to get them back out. But at that point, at the 2 minute point, I did say on air, I'm surprised that they're not calling them out right now and then having the opportunity to come back 6-on-4 with their number one power play group between the 2 minute and the 1 minute mark of the game.
And in that case, Pooley, you have to, both assistant coaches have been a head coach. Bobby Jones is the eye in the sky. I think he's hooked up to Capuano. Are you saying that you think they went through the protocol and decided not to, or you think they forgot?
I don't think they forgot. I think it was mentioned at some point. I do. I don't think, you know, it was someone's job to remind them, so they didn't forget. That's what I will say. It's not, you know, they know the time of the game. Someone is responsible for that, and usually it's not the head coach. It's simply not, because he's got so many things on his plate. Who's up next? You know, how am I going to manage this? Now, some head coaches do like to handle that themselves, Simmer. But that should be a conversation that it is a conversation that is had. And I did see the coaches communicate at that point. I'm right across from the benches, and I looked and I saw the coaches communicate at that point. So it may have been, but once again, I think sometimes when you go through a situation like that, maybe now you change a definition. And head coaches are always learning exact situations as well. And that might be a conversation where you said, okay, you can't give me a choice there. You have to tell me I am taking my time out there, not that should we take our time out there. And that may be, those are healthy conversations to have.
Yeah, oh no, I think everyone's always learning. I kind of looked at it, Pooley, and I've never coached, but I look at where Ottawa's at. I look at a game like last night, and I look at kind of a teaching moment in a sense of my group. Like, I would have, at the minute the power play comes, it's the middle of January. There's nobody in the building. Two of the bottom teams in the NHL. Wouldn't you say to your group, listen, timeout, pull the goaltender. Let's get Nick Paul on there as a bigger body. Let's go after these guys. They played yesterday. Like, in a review. I'm not saying last night, but as he could reconvene today, would that not be the discussion of, boy, we should be a little bolder here on our approach. We're not hinging on every point to try to make the playoffs at this point.
So you mean right at the three-minute mark at the start?
Oh, absolutely. Like, let's get after them. Like, listen, time out. Let's go 6-on-4. Come on. Here's a challenge to you guys. This is all about the whole learning curve here.
Yes, yeah, and I think I'm fully comfortable with that. I'd also say Brady Tkachuk or Josh Norris, whichever one takes the draw, is going to win the draw. We're going to get control, and that's when we're going to do it. And so all I'm doing is taking exactly what you're saying and taking it past puck possession. And as soon as I have puck possession, the problem was in that first minute, they didn't get that puck possession. Yeah. And I think that's what DJ referred to after the game, is that was the plan, the exact plan that you just said, except they didn't get possession, and he trusted that they would because he believes in his power play, and they'd had possession for a good portion of the evening on the power play. So I think that exact discussion did happen, Simmer.
Eric Brännström certainly got on the radar screen for a lot of different reasons last night. The Okposo hit you mentioned, physical side, the breakaway pass to Formanton on the, I think it was his first shift of the game. From his goal line all the way out to pretty much the opposing red line, like tape to tape, lots of other different little subtle play. I think you had a little highlight pack of him after the first period. Like, what are you, now that you've had a chance to see him in person as well, not just watching things on TV, what did you make of Brännström in particular and seeing him last night?
I like the growth of his game. I thought he was really good. He covers a lot of ground. He had a play when he was on the power play that we highlighted as well, where he was caught kind of in a two-on-one defending the power play. He went all the way to one side of the rink, then came all the way back against young Samuelson, Shel Samuelson's son, Matias Samuelson, literally traversed the ice twice in the course of seconds. And so he's confident in doing that. He just looks more confident. And, I get into these little golf analogies, and I talk about his long game with the Formanton pass, but he had some good short game passes as well last night, little 3-5 foot passes to the middle of the ice, through the defender's stick behind the net onto the tape of his partner. I think he put his partner in a good place. And I think that's a very underrated thing for a defenseman in the defensive zone, to always try and put your partner in a good place, so he's receiving the pass and moving forward with it and not costing himself a stride. I think he did that pretty well. He had a pretty full box line score, physical. He actually led the team in hits last night, and with a couple of other guys with four hits, and a little bit surprisingly physical against Okposo there, which caught them. Okposo's a big kid and caught them there. And there's still going to be a risk reward with Eric Brännström, I believe, in terms of until he finds a line of exactly what he can and can't do. And when a young defenseman comes into the league, he's pretty much, if you look at Eric Brännström playing at the junior level in Sweden, or even in the men's league as a young player, he's got a pretty green light. And that's what makes him a good player. And guys, I watched it last night, just switching gears a little bit here. Thomas Chabot is so good. And you're just watching the growth in his game. And there were points, 3 years ago when you'd say, what are you doing? And now you're looking at him saying, man, is he a good player. Like, he is just a really, really good hockey player. And he puts himself in less high-risk situations, but he's in full control. I mean, he's so confident in his ability to step up. You know, and it's easy to say because he's a couple of years older. And, you know, that's just what happens with a young defenseman. If you don't give him a little bit of leeway early, you don't get the results later. And it's such a fine line in development. I think that's where they're at with Eric Branstrom.
Yeah, so back to Branstrom for a second. He's listed, Dave, at 5'9". Everybody I know who's seen him in person says he's not 5'9". Like, he's probably closer to 5'7" than 5'9". And we know that this particular coaching staff and even the manager, they like a lot of hockey coaches, right? They like defensemen. They like the tall trees. You know, we saw Montreal play itself out for Montreal. So I guess my question for you is more philosophical than anything. Can you play and win a Stanley Cup with a defenseman that is as physically small as Eric Branstrom is?
Yes, you can. And you can do it by the makeup of the rest of the group. I don't think you can have two of them or three of them in the lineup, but you can have one. And, you know, if he's got elite skills and brings different elements to the game and can move the puck up ice and can play a role in the power play and can do a lot of other things, you can absolutely have one. But I don't think you can have multiples in the lineup. And, you know, also, you know, he's got a different sort of challenge in that he plays the same side as Thomas Chabot. So Thomas Chabot is going to eat up 27, 28, 29 minutes. And so now you're going to get minutes. And there will be people that will stay away from Chabot as well with their top line, you know, if you're on the road, so you get a matchup situation. So now he ends up with matchups. If he's the two or even the three on the left side, he ends up with matchups because people are staying away from Chabot. And so that's a little bit of a different challenge for him. But I do think you can win with one of that type of defenseman in the lineup, yes.
Do you think Josh Brown should be a full-time NHL player?
I think that's still a transition. I just do. I don't think this defense is complete by any means, Simmer. And I think, you know, in many ways, he's filled a need for this team, and that need is going to change as this team grows. And that's just, you know, you've still got a couple of young defensemen in Alassie Thompson or Jake Sanderson that you think are going to come in and push that. And that's going to happen organically, if you will. That's going to happen in the proper time when it's ready to happen. So I don't think you have to force that issue right now at the curve they're at.
So, Dave, you've been a player. You've been a coach. You've worked in management. And now you're working on the media side of things. I'm interested to get your opinion on what went down in Edmonton yesterday between Jim Matheson, the reporter, and Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah, I don't know Leon Draisaitl personally. You know, I've had occasion over the years, over the many years of dealing with Edmonton, to deal with, you know, Jim Matheson, and, you know, he's a veteran writer. And it's unfortunate. It also speaks to the times where over the last couple of years there's been no face-to-face interaction between these people. There simply hasn't. And I think relationships grow. There's a tremendous, tremendous amount of frustration in Edmonton right now on all sides. And, you know, the fans are frustrated. The media is covering the team, you know, is saying, well, this isn't what it was supposed to be. And they're starting to ask the challenging questions because it wasn't what it was supposed to be. You've got two of the best players in the world. You made some decisions over the summer to make that group better. It hasn't worked. And so... You know, I'm fine with the first two questions, and after that, at that point in a forum like that, I probably let it go if I'm asking the questions and I try and address the player one-on-one later. The problem is you can't address the player one-on-one later now, JR. You can't sit with him in the locker room 45 minutes after practice and say, you know, what's going on? What are you thinking? We don't have that option. And, you know, like Zoom calls, and you're part of a group, or if you're at the rink and you're fortunate enough, you know, to be in a province where there are people and you're allowed to be in the same room, it's a very formal setting. The player's up at the dais. You're not, you know, and so that part of it is unfortunate because over the years I was covered by some excellent writers. Did I always agree with them? Absolutely not. Did we iron things out? Yes, we did, because we sat like grown-ups in a room beside each other and ironed them out. And, you know, you just it's a piece of what we're dealing with right now in terms of media, and media player relations have changed drastically over the years. You know, when you had beat writers that you knew so personally and got to know so well over the years, guys like Jay Greenberg or Al Morganti or Boston had a great group of guys like Kevin Paul DuPont and, you know, the departed Stephen Harris and the guys that you could just trust and you knew. And that's not the way it is now. It's simply not. And social media is a platform now that takes that piece of it to a different level. I think it speaks as much to the frustration level of a superstar who's one of the best players in the world who's looking around saying, you know, we're 2-10-2 in our last 14 games. This is terrible. And you know, I'm taking the brunt of the questions. And I want a player to show emotion. I also want him to be in control. You know, there's so many different factors here. And it's unfortunate to watch it play out, but I think it speaks to the frustration level of everyone in Edmonton right now.
Is it also, Pooley, just a complete shift? We were discussing this off the air, where the print media and the voice they had, the platform, and I won't say this particular case, but there's got to be a lot of situations now where the players don't even necessarily look at the paper or have any idea who's writing on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's probably a little different on this one just because of the two people that were involved, Simmer. But yeah, I mean, if you try and absorb everything that's written about everything, you've got no chance. You know, there's a lot of voiceless, you know, or voiceful, faceless people out there that can you can put anything out there on social media, and it, you know, it can carry whatever weight it does. That is a part of it. This is a little different case. This is a veteran beat writer who's been around a long time and a superstar in the National Hockey League. So what you don't know, what people are going to be digging into today, okay, what history do these two have? What has Matheson written about Leon in the past that Leon did or didn't like, or, you know, that's what people will be digging up today.
Last one for you. The NHL has announced that after the All-Star break, they're no longer going to be testing players as they have been on a daily basis for the past month plus. Who are asymptomatic, unless it involves crossing the border, et cetera. Do you think that's the right decision?
I do think that's the right decision. You know, I've talked to so many different people in so many different fields about this. And, you know, even to go into the studio, we test ahead of going into the studio. And you're like, I'm perfectly healthy. I'm totally fine, but I'll test. And, you know, and so, boy, there's no right or wrong answers. You try and be safe right now. And, you know, I do think the way it's going across the board that you know, testing fully healthy players with no symptoms, we're past that stage now.
Yeah, I think the figure is that at least 70% of the players have already been on the COVID list.
Right.
Of the 700-odd players in the NHL, at least 70%.
Well, you're getting to be in a minority if you haven't been.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you really
exactly.
are. You know, across the way.
So Dave Poulin has a full off day today in Ottawa because you're going to, as far as I know, I think you're staying in town, right, to call the Columbus game, the Pittsburgh game tomorrow night here in Ottawa. So are you doing the canal? Like, what's the plan? Anything good?
I will be breaking speed records on that canal today at some point.
Nice.
Absolutely. It may go end to end on it. How far can I go? What's the limit?
7.8 kilometers from one end to the other. So if you're going downtown and back, because I'm assuming you're at the Westin, you're doing like a full like 15K. You got it in you?
I didn't bring my own skates because I only had a carry-on bag, and that may be a factor, JR.
Hey, all right. All right. Well, you'll give us a full report when we talk to you again on Friday.
Absolutely. Have all a right. great day, guys.
You Thanks. Too. Thanks, Dave. We are back. Maybe content there with Matthew Good, 8:46, J.R. Simmer and Hammer. We're here till 10 o'clock. That's with Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech, and Kenny Wallace will take over on this Wednesday morning. Still to come between now and then, your chance to score yourself $100 from Gabriel Pizza. It is our big game contest, which kicked off on Monday. We're going to have it right up until the Super Bowl, which I'm allowed to say because it has not with the contest. I'm saying that the contest will run until the actual event. The event is called the Super Bowl. That will happen on February the 13th. So next 4 weeks, three times per weekday, once with us, once on In the Box, once on The Drive, $100 we're giving away every single time for you to fill your gaping maw with all kinds of grub from Gabriel Pizza for game day or any other day. You can't hold off until February 13th. You can do it this weekend, or Simmer advocated, just do it today. Just grab it today and grab it and go.
Oh, this weather, and you're driving in today, JR, massive snowbanks. Now, is the annual Super Bowl party at the old Calabogie Lake back on?
You know what? I have not seen. Usually the email comes out sometime now. You know, this is...
What's the gentleman's name that's in charge?
Derek.
Yeah, Derek. Yeah. I met Derek at Dale Hills Cottages.
Yes,
or we've met before, but
he's a good man.
Intermingling crews. So yeah,
did
that
not
was
do a, it last yeah. year.
Did you do it the year that the Eagles won, or did you hunker down at home?
You know what? I sat that one out and stayed at home.
Yeah, okay. Because I understand. I mean, that's
Sen Superfan had become at that point Eagles Superfan and asked me to stay home so she could watch the game with me. And what am I to say to however old she was at that stage?
Yeah. Still Eagles fan?
Yes, kind of drifted out. Then a little bit back in. I'm not quite at the level as the Super Bowl run of 2018. But I did show a little more interest this year.
Would she drift to another team or just not be interested in the sport? You texted out as well. No surprise, JR. Those massive.
What? Sorry?
You texted out, sorry.
Oh, yes.
Or tweeted. I was going to go in between the massive TV numbers for the NFL weekend as well, right? In Canada?
Well, yeah. I think I've seen enough of this to know that the San Francisco Dallas game was going to do, as they call it in the business, a big number. Yeah. I got to go find I believe it was. So in Canada,
is it 1.2?
1.28. So about 1.3 million people watched that football game. And that wasn't even, and I mean, it drifted into prime time, but it kicked off at 4:30 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. It's Sunday, but prime time is when you have your biggest available audience, right? More people are at home at night, especially on the weekend. And Sunday night is the biggest night of the weekend. Mm-hmm. And so it actually was, I think the Eagles Bucks game, which actually the 1 o'clock game, did like 900,000 or there. Anyway, those are huge numbers. Like those are bigger numbers than, I'm not going to say they're bigger than when the Leafs play on Saturday night, but those are bigger numbers than you see for a Hockey Night in Canada broadcast for pretty much any other team other than the Leafs in Montreal.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I just
a lot of people are just watching football,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, no surprise. Now, as it relates to, I guess, COVID, relates to here in Canada and how bloody cold the weekend was. I mean, it was just sets up perfectly. So, but I still don't think it just continues to, and I kind of relate to the two boys in our house. It is nonstop, JR, football talk. Like they're talking about, as I say, offensive tackles and different things now for playing the Madden game and building their own teams. Familiarity with the whole thing. Dez Zone, which I've got to remind myself to cancel because there's no need for it now, right? I don't need Dez Zone.
You can watch some soccer.
Yeah, I'm not a big soccer guy. Yeah. So, yeah, but anyways, it just really is. It's, that trend of the popularity of it and the dialogue for two kids that only play flag football is incredible.
Yes, and of course, that was Wild Card Weekend. We got the divisional playoffs this weekend, and Dallas is the biggest draw on television. There's no doubt about that. They're out, but there's still a lot of incredibly popular teams that are left, probably headlined by the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and they step into the fray this weekend, hosting the Niners, also a really popular team, in a primetime game on Saturday night. So that'll be a big draw as well. And any questions about Aaron Rodgers and his injured toe? Apparently not. He said he's good to go.
Okay.
So he said his toe is feeling as good as it has or can for the entire season. So he's fine.
Am I accurate in saying, guys, that the three sexiest draws in the National Football League would be Brady, Mahomes, and Rodgers, Jer? Am I missing anybody?
Brady, Mahomes, and Rodgers. No, I think you're good there.
You know, and that's Kansas City's always been good, but that's taking next level. The other thing I was looking up, because I've always had this in my head. I know that Patrick Mahomes, or at least I thought, I knew he was taller than Kyler Murray, but I had no idea that Patrick Mahomes was 6'3", and I have no idea why I want to get this information out, JR, but I somehow had him as a bit of an undersized quarterback. He's a big boy, right?
He's a bit pear-shaped.
Well, he is for sure.
He kind of knock-kneed, when he walks.
But I just had this idea that he was kind of a six-footer.
Right.
He's a 6'3" guy. So, as you said, for the matchups, and Green Bay, such a historic franchise, Cincinnati, the further they go, I think with Mr. Burrow, will go to some of that level, right, as far as a draw recognition. Everybody's in love with the Bills right now. I just can't wait for the games.
Yeah, Bills-Kansas City is going to be tremendous. I mean, if that was the Super Bowl, it would be a tremendous matchup, and we're talking about the second round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going home early. who hoped they were going home late between the Bills and the Chiefs, and that's the last game on Sunday night as well, the primetime game. Now, speaking of the playoffs, we're into that time of year in which we mark anniversaries of sort. I want to take you back to now, believe it or not, 8 years ago, 2014. The Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers had just played a game. A back-and-forth affair in which the Seahawks eventually prevailed 23-17, thanks in no small part to a defensive play by Richard Sherman against Michael Crabtree in the dying moments of that game, which snuffed out a Niners rally. And then, of course, Richard Sherman. I think for a lot of us, this is the first time we really saw him interviewed. And because Aaron Andrews from ESPN is doing the interviewing, and we're kind of like, what is this guy all about?
Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
All right, before... And Joe, back over to you.
Okay, all right. She said, like,
that line is just aged perfectly like a good wine. Eh?
Yeah.
Who's talking about you?
Yeah. Well, and if you go back and watch the clip, like on her face, like it obviously just popped into her mind of, like who is talking to you?
Well,
about
I think she thinks she's being attacked by Sherman, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, and he's actually talking about Crabtree, and he had a personal kind of feud with Crabtree, and of course he makes the play at the end of the game against Crabtree, so that's why he was excited. And LOB is Legion of Boom back in the day with the Seahawks, but that was for a lot of people, myself included, the kind of the first time I had seen him, and I kind of like after it was over, I said, what is this guy all about? And then you actually watch him. And he was a great player back in the day, one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. He's a Stanford graduate. He's very articulate, right, and speaks on a number of really important issues on things. And you compare that and contrast that to what you heard right there, and you realize, like, when you're in game mode, right, you're like this almost completely different person. And then you watch this person six other days of the week and, completely normal every day. Well-liked, well-thought-of person.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was also, I think, he had the opportunity, no matter what he said, JR, he got a pass because he went to Stanford. But that was also at a time where that was destination TV, right? It's the Seattle-San Francisco rivalry at that point, how two of the best in the business, they were just really fun. And it's really where you really felt a hatred between the two teams. And we realistically we don't see that often anymore.
And Hammer, correct me if I'm wrong, Seahawks are your team. That was the year they went on to the Super Bowl and won, correct?
That dramatic, dramatic yes. Super Bowl against the Broncos.
One of the only really bad Super Bowls we've had in the last 20 years.
Oh, that Patriots-Rams one was a
Oh, that was
piece
terrible.
Of
you're
junk
right.
Too.
Sorry, that was competitive on the scoreboard, but a terrible game.
Oh, my God, that was
The game they won against the Broncos, the Super Bowl, that was in New York where they snapped the ball over Peyton Manning's head in the first play of the game for a safety. And
a
it
good
was
start.
42-8. Was that the score?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Something like that?
You're right around there.
Yeah. Those are the two bad Super Bowls, but by and large, the Super Bowl has been great for the past 20 or 25 years. Anyway, that's down the road. So that was this day back in 2014. Okay, 8:55. Let's get to more of your texts at 12-1200. A lot of people weighing in on our discussion last hour, and we continued it with Dave Poulin about the whole thing between Leon Draisaitl and the Edmonton reporter Jim Matheson. Some reaction to that from Unsigned. He asked a BS question. He can't honestly expect Leon to throw his teammates under the bus or the coach or management. Someone else writes, the notion that just because someone's in the Hall of Fame deserves more respect than anyone is bizarre. Someone else writes, if you're a Hall of Fame reporter, then have better questions. He didn't even believe the question he was asking. Mike writes, players have a responsibility and are paid well for more than on-ice play, and interviews are a part of that. Someone else writes, it was a reporter being confrontational with his silly comment about why are you so prickly? And yeah, so there anyway, that's some of the reactions that's come in so far.
Yeah, no, I understand. Everybody has a different angle, JR. Now, for the players themselves, they do answer to the media. Now, the majority of what's said isn't much. What's interesting to Edmonton, though, and I think he could have just said, we all got to look in the mirror. I didn't think he had to go any one angle. But Dave Tippett's on a short list of the coaches in the NHL is not afraid and has always been the first one to call out his players, right? I mean, old tipster doesn't exactly walk the line.
I think the issue that some people have, and I'm not following Edmonton, I'm from a far, right? But I think, just in reading what some of the people in Edmonton's reaction has been, is that they did not feel that management and the coaching staff feet has been held to the fire as much of the players.
Oh, okay,
in that.
Okay.
And so there have been opportunities, and Ken Holland had that news conference. Was it last week when he came out, right? It was like, 10, they've called a news conference for 10 a.m. tomorrow. I wonder who's getting fired. No, it's just everybody's been asking for Ken Holland. So he's finally going to appear. And I did not watch it. I've saw clips from it, so I can't speak to it about what the length and breadth of its entirety. But I think some people feel that he was not has not been held to account as much as the players.
Also, unless he went through and read all the articles as to what Matheson was saying, right, or what's the backstory of the two players, you know, that ends up being a little bit of the storyline itself, JR. And then the next part that comes, I don't know if it's there yet, is don't do that, because then it's a small Canadian market, and if you're tough on the players,
right,
nobody's going to want to ever play here again. You know,
do you believe that?
No. Well, no. You know what? I was thinking of this the other day. Here's what I think is that I think the National Hockey League, I'll say this with all the other sports, I think baseball and basketball and the NHL have the haves that are meaning they're tough to play in, and then the ones that aren't tough to play in. Where I think the National Football League, I don't know if you agree, JR, across the board is tough to play in.
Are you talking about in cities?
Yes. Yeah. I'm saying in the National Football League, the coverage is so intense, so on top of it, I don't care what market you're playing in. If it's Jacksonville, they're going to be after you. If it's Green Bay. And in the National Hockey League, I don't think it's being hard at all. I don't think the media is hard in Canada at all. But I totally understand that that same player walks into Dallas or walks into Nashville, walks into Tampa, Florida, Carolina. He ain't ever going to have to answer a question from anybody. Would I like an easier life if I'm not a player? Well, probably I would. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think it's harder than what you'd see in the NFL or in a tough market for one of the other sports. But I think for sure a guy like Draisaitl would kindly say, well, we actually suck, and now this kind of sucks, and I'm out of here.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think that, you know, everybody's wired differently. And, you know, for some people, when they're criticized, whether it's, you know, whatever it is in life, but in this case, we're talking about an athlete. Mm-hmm. Some people, criticism is water off a duck's back. Yeah. Some people are kind of internalize it, and it really affects them. Mm-hmm. And there's everything in between all of that. And what exacerbates and exaggerates this situation, of course, is how poorly the team is playing and the fact that it's in a Canadian, and I liken pretty much everything to be a fishbowl environment. I agree with you that I think for the most part it's not overly critical. I think in Edmonton
as well, they are generally very, and I'm not saying they're cheerleaders at all, Jer, but I think the media there is really, hey, they want the team to do well. They want it to be a good product.
Yeah, I think all of that, oh, it's tough to play in Canada. It's way, way overblown when you compare it to, as you said, some other sports. If you try playing for the Yankees in New York
with a soccer team in Europe
or anything in Boston or whatever, I'll say that in Montreal it appears to be different on the hockey side. Mm-hmm. And I'm not reading any of what the French media is saying, but I think at times it goes to a completely different level and to a personal level, is my understanding in Montreal. But I even think in Toronto, it's really not that hard. And so this whole part of what I do believe, though, is the fishbowl part of it, that you do not and cannot escape it when you play hockey in a Canadian market.
Yeah.
And when the times are good and your team is rolling and you go on a playoff run, there's probably nothing better. But when times are bad, like they are, for instance, in Edmonton and have been for several years here in Ottawa, it's not so much the media criticism that I think that gets to you. I think it's the fact that it follows you everywhere. Like you go out and let's say it's more normal times and you go to a restaurant and it's just like everybody's looking at you and for the most part, players are accommodating and signing autographs and you're at the grocery store. Like it's all encompassing and all consuming and you never have an opportunity to just kind of let your guard down. And especially in the days of social media and everybody's got a phone and everybody's filming every single thing, looking for you to make a mistake. And if they do, it's immediately up on social media saying, what an a-hole this guy is. Look what he did. Like that part of it would be exhausting.
Yeah, no, I agree. What's interesting, though, Jared, when I was with the Leafs, I was really surprised on a personal level, no matter how bad the team was doing. I think historically, Leafs fans in person, where it does go next level, and look at Neville Gallimore in the weekend, what happens now, and this is for any player. Now, in Montreal, you hear the stories about, well, if you're an older player and your kids are going to school and the other kids are talking about it, that filters to your wife, that filters to the player. If I'm Leon Draisaitl in Germany, my friends in Germany are texting back and saying, gosh, what's all going on in Edmonton? It's a filtering back, as you said, on a personal level that usually stings. Because if you're a young single guy, you know, you are so in control now, JR, of the way you're controlled as an athlete. You don't ever have to interact with anybody in your life other than answering a couple of easy questions from the media. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be part of your life. I mean, you have so many outlets via video games, watching other news sources, that none of it has to turn local. But where the pressure points do happen was when it circles back to any type of your family or you get, and I'll even say that for managers and coaches, where, you know, a buddy of theirs texts back and says, oh, this is what I heard or what I've seen. That's when for sure it starts to sting.
Yeah, we didn't bring up the Neville Gallagher thing, and of course he took a very untimely penalty at the end of that meltdown by the Cowboys in the playoff game. And what I was struck by, because I follow Neville on Twitter, he tweeted out that, you know, I screwed up, it's all on me, you know, and please don't involve my family in any criticism, please direct it all at me. He tweeted that out, I want to say, excuse me, within 20 or 25 minutes of the end of the game. And I don't know whether at that point he had already heard from, and I know his brother's in town, and, you know, obviously here in Ottawa I'm talking about, of whether he had already been told, like, people are harassing me already based on what you did in the game, or whether he was trying to cut it off at the pass knowing that what was to come. I was really struck by how quickly he was on social media throwing himself under the bus and saying, please don't involve my family.
Yeah, and what's scary on Twitter now, and I remember something that happened with PK Subban, JR, how quick are people to make fake accounts from other places saying that they're in Dallas and, oh, this is a reflection on the Dallas. You have no idea where that account's even coming from, right?
Yep, yep.
And they do make it personal there. I mean, there's some pretty bad people out there when it comes to that and being super anonymous.
Okay, your thoughts, again, anything welcome. We'll keep the texts and the tweets going. 12-1200, standard messaging rates apply. You want to get a hold of us or tweet at us at TSN1200. Phone lines are always open at 750-1200. We will take a break. It's just past 9 o'clock. Bring you the latest news. Run down the scoreboard, all the details on the Sens 3-1 loss to Buffalo. Back at practice today, off to Pittsburgh for a game tomorrow night against the Penguins. All the latest on last night's game and your reaction to that as well. Coming up as we continue along on this Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.